Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Adam, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me today. I'd love for you just to walk us through a little bit about yourself for intro, to intro yourself for the listeners of our podcast.
Sure. Thank you for having me. So for more than 20 years now, I've been working in the strategy and transformation space. I've spent approximately half of that time working in consulting roles, advising businesses on their strategic outlook and helping drive transformation in all sorts of industries and all sorts of functions. So I guess the summary of that part of my career would be at best eclectic. I worked with automotive, healthcare, FMCG, financial services, and a lot of time with high-tech industrial companies as well, on everything from post-merger integration to really operational transformation stuff. So I always like to think of that as the kind of eclectic years, and then kind of bookending either part of that that phase of my career was time spent working in aerospace. So right at the start of my career, I spent a few years in a major aeronautics company, and then I actually rejoined that same company after the 10 years away. And for the last 3 years, I've been the CEO of a subsidiary, again, really with a focus on driving transformation, both in our parent company, but also within the sub. Outside of work, the things that I'm passionate about are, well, first, I have a young family, so that tends to take up a lot of my time and energy when I'm not in the office. But when I do have some chance to kind of disconnect and I'm looking to kind of get some energy back, there's nothing I love more than I live in the south of France, then heading off to the Pyrenees with my bike, climbing a few mountains, and then finding a good pastry shop to finish the raid off.
Awesome. Well, that's a really great intro, and I'd love to start with the big picture. And how is it that you balance the need for a long-term vision with the necessity of staying flexible and responsive to immediate changes in the realm of innovation that you're in?
It's an excellent question. I really think, actually, strategy for me is, it should never feel like it's a cage. If it is, then it's really, it's not going to take you in the right direction. I always think of strategy should open up opportunities, and it should give you focus. And I think the biggest challenge when you talk about balance is mostly priority set, actually. And I think if you get good at setting your direction of travel, and within that direction of travel, setting your priorities, what you've already, you've won a large part of the battle. And I think one of the questions that I always like to ask myself, and I always like to ask my clients, actually, is what do you actually need to be good at to achieve that? Because it's always great having grand ambitions, grand schemes, seeing, the opportunities that are there, but there's often a disconnect between what you're good at today and what you need to be good at to achieve that. And you can put in a lot of energy into the wrong places very easily if you don't just ask yourself that question. And I tend to do that at all levels, actually, within the company. And so we ask ourselves that today with my team, on a yearly basis. What is it we need to be good at this year to achieve the plan? And are we then doing that in each of the teams? If we're spinning out a new product or a service, we're asking ourselves, what do we need to be good at in relation to that maybe we're not good at right now? And I think that is a key reflex as well, that in any strategy implementation, we need to develop and we need to turn into a ritual.
Asking yourself is something that's obviously really important, like you say, and it's also something that helps you sort of stay flexible in what you do and sort of stay open to making these new changes. But staying flexible often means introducing a certain amount of chaos, be it good or bad. And I'd love to know a little bit about how you ensure that this chaos leads to positive outcomes rather than sort of confusion or inefficiency in a business.
I think it's funny because people tend to see chaos as something to be avoided, or you actually say it's good or bad, the question. And I think I think there's a first thing about just accepting that it will be present in whatever we do, in fact. So any type of shift we want to make, any type of new direction, even stopping something, actually, remarkably, causes probably more chaos than starting something new, in my experience. So I think the first step is accepting it, because when you accept it, you expect it to happen. And when you expect it to happen, that's when you can decide how much chaos is the right amount of chaos. I think the idea of saying we're going to make this change or we're not going to suffer any impact in productivity or any impact in clarity within the team, that's absolutely unrealistic, because whenever we start something new, you step into the unknown. And if it was that easy that we knew it all and we controlled it all from the outset, we'd probably already be doing it. So I tend to say to my team and to the clients I work with, there will certainly be things that happen along the way that we've not anticipated. That's absolutely okay. It's how we respond and react to those that will determine the outcome. And I also think there's a key thing about learning to hold your nerve a little bit as well when things get a bit chaotic, and not shying away from pushing through. And I think we often have a tendency, especially in big organizations, to see chaos starting, to see things becoming a little bit uncertain, to hear the fear and the worry from the team, and we'll back down. And in fact, it's in those moments we kind of have to hold our nerve a little bit more.
And speaking of holding nerve, like obviously the sort of communication of strategic shifts can be really challenging. And I'd love for a little bit more about how you sort of convey these changes to your team and stakeholders effectively.
I think there's a lot to be said for consistency, actually, which is when you say you want to go, you want to take a certain direction of travel, and you explain what are the markers and the signals that you're making progress towards that, you need to keep revisiting them, and you need to show the progress, and you need to give people access to the information that's going to enable them to see the progress you are making. And that can be financial metrics, it can be metrics linked to a number of new products launched. It could be something to do with the global footprint of the organization or the markets. I mean, I think you have to pick from within the wide range of data points available to you, the two or three that people are going to be able to connect with. They're going to see that it fits with the narrative you're giving it. And at the same time, keep going back to those and saying, you know, 2 years ago we discussed this. This is where we were. Now look where we are today. And you see the trajectory. The trajectory may or may not fit the trajectory that you thought it would 2 years ago in terms of the level of growth or the number. It could be above or below. But what's important is people through the consistency in the direction. I think also accepting that some people find they want certainty in strategy. And I think you have to also give them that. And I'm always very upfront with people I work with that the last thing strategy will give you is certainty. In fact, it will give you a direction of travel. It gives you an idea of where you want to get to, but you have to be totally open-minded to the uncertainty that comes with it and the opportunities that will present themselves along the way. It's also, I think, super important that as leaders who drive transformation and change, we admit very quickly when we've got it wrong. And I think telling the team it's not certain, in fact, it's much more uncertain. We've tried these things, and in some areas it's worked and you can see the progress we've made, and in other areas it's not. That also builds confidence, because when people feel you own the fact that things have not completely followed the plan, they won't, I think, a part of the fear. You know, it's not that it goes away, but I feel like people feel less fear of being part of the failure themselves when you share the leadership on that as well.
And obviously, like you, a little bit more to that is putting some things in hard fact and stating it as hard fact as like, this is exactly how it will go. When it doesn't go that way, it doesn't look like that's a fumble. It looks like it's just a, you know, you've accepted that there may be, you know, diversions in that.
And I often feel like people want a strategy to give them that clarity about this is where we're going to get to, we're going to be this type of organization, or the product's going to have X amount of success. But it's impossible to predict that in today's world. And actually what we have to do is give that direction and say, you know, this is where we believe we can get through. These are the key areas we want to work on. And I think accepting that whatever you've said is your strategy will be wrong as soon as it leaves your mouth is a really good starting point.
That ties in quite nicely to what I had next, because obviously a lot of this is talking about sort of flexibility and consistency. And how do you determine which of those aspects of your business strategy should sort of remain stable, like sort of the ones that you should sort of maybe sort of commit to a little bit more, and which should be more adaptable?
If you asked me personally, I would say nothing should remain stable. You should always be asking yourself constantly, am I doing the right things? Do I need to be good at this? Should I be keeping, starting, stopping? You know, I think I would be questioning everything all of the time, but at the same time, I also, from my experience of being a CEO, appreciate that there are things imposed by the industry, by the system, by regulation. And I think it's about understanding the system in which you operate, recognizing some of the constraints which are the non-negotiables, kind of finding your peace with them, and then saying, right, but I still have these variables I can play with. It could be that you have a profitability target which is fixed, and you have to make that target, and that has to, there's a minimum threshold there. So you're never going to jeopardize the part of your business which secures that. You need to stay good at that. But at the same time, nothing stops you exploring other markets or business models that can help increase that and maybe lessen your dependency on that. So I think it's about fixing the kind of frame in which you want to operate and challenge things. And then I would say never resting on your laurels is quite important as well. I think there's been a tendency to focus a lot in the last couple of years on very short-term results because of, I think, what a lot of businesses faced during 2020 and 2021. And actually, I feel like if we're not investing now in the mid to long term, we're going to be irrelevant by the time we get there. And so I think the one kind of non-negotiable data point for me there as well is, are we really making constant investment into the future? And for me, that's also another kind of non-negotiable part of my strategic plan.
And I know we've touched on this a little bit before, but obviously, you know, innovation comes with its sort of share of failures, be it intentional or unintentional. And I'd love it doesn't have to be a real world example, but how is it that you handle these failures and what valuable lessons have you learned from them?
Well, I've had plenty of failures. I think failures can be all sorts of things. Failures can be the decision to stop something, and then you get a really strong pushback from customers that says, well, actually, we really valued that part of your service or your product, so please keep it. I think the best thing about failing, actually, the sense of connection it can bring to the team you work with on something. So I think there's nothing more important in the solidarity of feeling together. And it's kind of having that moment where you'll, I guess, sit down and reflect on what are all the regrets we've had and that we wish we'd done things differently, and what are all the things we've learned and taken away from it. Some of my own kind of personal failures have been the best learning experiences as well, because you come away and you think, okay, I'm never going to make that error of judgment again. I think there's also an element for me in questioning my own decisions on a regular basis and thinking to myself, you know, have I made a mistake there? And trying to catch the mistake before it gets too visible or too big, because I'm sure I make mistakes each and every day, and I'm sure some of the decisions I make are not the best ones. And you learn something maybe 2 or 3 weeks after, which changes the outlook. And I think constantly revisiting that decision or the decisions you've taken and reorientating things is very, very healthy. And unfortunately, it's not something that's easy for the team to follow, actually, because then they say, well, wait, didn't we just say 6 weeks ago or 12 weeks ago that we would stop doing that or we would start doing that, and now we're saying we didn't. And I think it's always about giving people that constant context around something as well is really important, and saying, you know, actually, this was taking us down a path where we would have been possibly having bigger regrets in 6 months' time. So for me, failure is certainly not something to be feared. I think it's something to be valued. And I tried to have a culture, at least in the companies that I work with, where people celebrate the failure in the same way as they celebrate the success. I guess the one failure I have the greatest difficulty with is the one that impacts directly customers. And then in different roles I've had, you often get that that horribly awkward moment where the customer phones up by the failure. But it's never a nice experience. But I think it's also quite healthy to eat a little bit of humble pie.
Looking ahead from those past sort of failures, looking forward to the future, with any sort of market becoming increasingly competitive, how can companies, like obviously you've had a lot of time in aerospace as well, stay ahead of the curve and continually sort of reinvent themselves, maybe specifically to that sort of field?
I think I touched on it earlier. For me, there was a logic of never standing still. I think over the last couple of years, I've really observed that big company risk aversion that was already quite present pre-pandemic has seems to have gone up a notch. And I think there's a lot more focus on short-termism right now and the performance of the organization short-term and squeezing as much kind of shareholder return out of things as is possible. I'm putting that before the mid to long-term relevance. And I think healthy companies will be the ones that continue to make substantial and strong investments in the future. And they tried to find that balance between, yeah, we need to deliver results right now, but we also need to have a viable business and a relevant business and relevant products and services in the future. And it's quite a difficult narrative, I think, to have towards shareholders and stakeholders at the moment who are expecting returns. But I think for me, the key will be, really preserving that that financing for the future.
Going past the sort of the short-term incentivizing that a lot of people are doing, like you mentioned there just before, what do you see the biggest challenges that businesses in the next sort of 5-10 years are going to face? And how should they prepare for that?
I think we're all suffering from the kind of speed of transformation, change, the volume of information we have to deal with. I think it's always just constantly going up a notch. And I think the biggest challenge right now is priority setting for a lot of organizations. So where to put the energy and the limited resources that they have and where are the right places to invest? And then when I think about the teams, there's a real challenge around just headspace and saying, do people have the mental and emotional bandwidth to cope with everything that they're dealing with in work? And so I think there's that balance of having really clear priorities and having a team with the headspace to deliver on those priorities will be key for the next 2 years. I think reskilling people will be fundamental as well. I think it's not the technology that counts, it's how people are going to use it. And we don't have a great track record of reskilling people for new roles very quickly. And I think that's going to become even more critical. I think the whole sustainability of the production services that companies deliver will take on even greater importance. I only see that becoming a more stronger fundamental part of each and every kind of successful company's outlook. And then I think the last thing is about risk, actually. I, when I was thinking about this, I really was saying to myself, having leaders in organizations consciously say, are we taking enough risk? What was our last risk we took? What did we learn? What did we take off? I think that will be a key element for the sustained success of companies.
Brilliant. And that brings us to the end of sort of the main body of questions. I'd say you pass for flying colours. we go into a little bit of a quickfire question round at the very end. You've given some really great advice over the past sort of 20 minutes or so. What is the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
I'm hesitating between two. I think there's something around if you've got something to say, just say it, actually, was probably the best piece of advice I was ever given at the start of my career. And I think I found myself in boardrooms with a lot of smart people, a good bit older than me, probably wondering what I was doing there. And I came out of a board meeting and one of the partners for the consulting company as well said, "Why are you so frustrated?" And I said, "Well, I was said this, this, and this." And he said, "If you've got something to say, please just say it." I was like, "Okay, that's quite a good piece of advice." And I think that has served me quite well for the last kind of 18 years.
What is the one word that your friends would use to describe you?
Relentless.
What is the first work thing that you're really proud of?
I think it goes right back to my student days when I was working with a big steel manufacturer and I worked the night shift with the team. And we put in place some really basic process changes for them, but it just made their life like so much easier. And seeing how happy and pleased they were at the end of that shift, because it meant that their already difficult job had been made a little bit easier and more comfortable, I think that was actually definitely one of the most rewarding
little things adding up, and you get to see the results in real time.
Exactly. And I think it was also just the connection I had to the guys. I mean, yeah, that was a totally different world to the one I live in.
This is a little bit of a mean one, actually, because I don't even know if I could answer this one. If you could listen to one album for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I can't answer with one.
Give us
I think it would deeply depend on the mood I'm in. I think I'd start with the Verve Urban Hymns, probably. But then I'd probably have Only Revolutions by Biffy Clyro in there. And then maybe something like I Am Music by Little Wayne. just to throw another ball.
That's a great selection, but actually.
It would really depend on my mood, to be honest. But one album for the rest of my life, I'd probably end up hating it after 3 weeks.
A final one, and this is something I ask everyone. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most, how weird are you, Adam?
8. Today. It's only getting worse than you hold up the world.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me, Adam. I really appreciate it, and hope to speak to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you very much, Josh.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.